WBAI car. That's 1-866-922-4227. WBAI's partners will take all of your information and take care of the details. You can also visit WBAI.org and click on the Ways to Donate banner for more information. Again, that number is 1-866-WBAI-CAR. And then you can leave the lawn ornaments to Foxworthy and friends.
Greetings. This is Malika Lee Whitney, producer and host of Untitled, broadcast Saturdays, 8 a.m. to 10 a.m. I'm encouraging you to support listener-sponsored WBAI Radio during our current membership drive. If there ever was a time when we need independent voices to resist and challenge the status quo, that time is here, that time is now. Your financial contribution makes a difference in helping to sustain this vitally important radio station that is WBAI Radio. Thank you.
Your prime time is on a Saturday night. Well, gee, we finally had Night Shift ready to play, and now it's vanished off of the computer. When I say we have Night Shift ready to play, we have the first half of Night Shift ready to play. I'm sure Mike is hard at work on part two. As I sit here on unpaid overtime. Let's turn to Night Shift. Hey, Mike, if you're listening, make the rest of the show 10 minutes short, huh? So we can fit it all in.
You're tuned to listen to sponsored radio WBAI 99.5 FM in New York. I'm Mike Sargent, and I've got a special Night Shift tonight. We're going to talk with Jack Rico, who's the host of the Totally Relevant podcast. And we happen to be talking on the phone this evening and post-Oscars. I had done a bit on Fox News in the morning. I had to get up at the crack of dawn and do that. And then he and I started talking. Now, Jack Rico is a Latino film critic and culture critic, and we often have conversations, often just he and I talking on the phone after a movie we've seen, and we always get into these deep conversations. And we started getting into a deep conversation. I said, Jack, maybe you should record this. And he was like, you know what, man? You're right. So he went ahead and recorded it, and then we ended up doing a whole show, an episode of his show, but I realized I liked the conversation so much, I'd make it part of an episode of my show. So he recorded it, it ended up being, like I said, an episode of his show, an episode of my show, so I'm going to begin Night Shift with that conversation I had with Jack Rico, and we got the chance to talk about the Oscars, what won, what didn't win, the UCLA diversity report, that I did a piece on I-24 News about last week, and just a number of things. And I thought it was a conversation that was definitely one that should be heard on my show, on these airwaves, on WBAI. And we are still in a marathon. We had to extend our time because we really need your support, especially here at Night Shift. You know, late at night, you know, doing a late night show is not an easy thing. It's not an easy thing to do. It's not an easy thing to put together. Doing shows on BAI, essentially we're here, we volunteer, we put in our time because we care. And we hope that you care. And when you're a BAI buddy, that means that you support us. That means that you're making a statement about how much and how important public radio is to you, how WBAI is to you, hopefully during this show, during Night Shift. And if you've pledged, pledge again. If you haven't pledged, you've never heard this show before, please pledge and keep listening. because Jack Rico does a show. It's called the Totally Relevant Podcast. You can see it on iTunes. But we do Night Shift. Night Shift will be on iTunes very soon. And I got to say, I love radio. I love the fact that I can get on air and talk about the things that I do. Later on in the show, we'll have Byron and some special guests, and we'll do something a little more traditional. We'll play some of the DGM. But in the meantime, take a listen to some of what I got to talk about with Jack Rico, but make a pledge. Become a WBAI buddy at the $25 level, at the $50 level. It just basically means that every month, and even if you can't afford more than $10 a month, that'll help. They want us to do at least 10 per show. I'd love to get it out of the way. Right now, you can make a pledge. Go to give to WBAI. That's the number two, give, the number two. WBAI.org, or just go to WBAI.org. There's a million ways for you to pledge right there. If you want to get the DGM, you can do that right there at give2wbai.org. Just go, WBAI.org. Just go to the site right now. There's ways for you to pledge. Become a BAI buddy right now during Night Shift. But please, take a listen to, this is a show that I did with Jack Rico. Like I said, we got a chance to talk about doing the Oscars. And we did this earlier in the day, Monday, the day after the Oscars. And we got a chance to talk about what it means right now for diversity to have a Mexican director, the fourth Mexican Oscar-winning director, the lack of Latina representation, the amount of representation we saw in presenters, but does that translate to behind the scenes? We really got deep. And hopefully you'll enjoy this show, and hopefully it will make you want to pledge here on listener-sponsored radio, WBAI. Again, I'm Mike Sargent, and this is Night Shift. And you know, usually, generally, life is like science fiction, but I'm beginning this show. It's our film special. It's our post-Oscar special, where I talk with Jack Rico about the Oscars, its significance. And remember, America's gross national product is entertainment.
I went to sleep, Mike, around like 2 in the morning, simply because I was unpacking, unspooling, unfolding the events of what happened at the Oscars, which for me were one of the great, in terms of inclusion and diversity, it was one of the great award shows that I had seen because, man, for me as a Hispanic film critic and a Hispanic in this media profession, it is very hard to see us represented at the highest scales of these award shows that are, that since I can remember, my brain, the visual has always been of a Caucasian slate of people celebrating themselves. And for us to finally see the representation of us belonging in these award shows, and dude, to a certain extent, almost taking over the award show. That's how it felt. And I'm talking about from the elements of the show. You could hear it in the music. You could hear it from the orchestral director, who was African-American, to the only thing was Jimmy Kimmel, but I like Jimmy Kimmel. So, you know, there's no problem with that. I don't want him out to kind of get, you know, Dave Chappelle, even though that would be great. There was so much diversity and so much joy and rejoicing going on, including the commercials. I think I had mentioned this to you. I had texted you last night. I was like, is every other commercial now diverse? I feel like I've seen a catalyst, a watershed moment that's happened because of the Me Too movement, because of a movie, a revolutionary movie like Get Out and Black Panther and even Coco itself. For the last year, we have seen three movies, and I would say that those are the three movies that have changed the game in Hollywood when it comes to cinema. What were your thoughts on the Oscars? Because I want to get to some other very relevant topics. And I want to talk more about, not so much about the breaking down of this Oscars, but I want to know what this means moving forward and the progress that I expect to come after this.
Well, a few things. I didn't feel as effusively, joyous about it as you do, but I am optimistic about the future. And when you say three films, do you mean Black Panther, Get Out, and Coco?
Yes.
All right. Well, I think, yes. For me, those are the things that mean the most. While, pardon the pun here, on the face of Oscar, it was very inclusive. It was very, there were lots of presenters of color, and the Me Too movement moves forward, and all of that stuff. That's all great. But the real deal is, and I'm pretty sure you're aware of the document that was just released last week of the inclusivity. That has barely changed. And the thing is this, I am optimistic because of Coco and optimistic because of Black Panther and optimistic because of Get Out that there will be more opportunities, along with being optimistic about Me Too. But I don't feel it's happened yet. I feel
but
that.
Wait, so are you saying this is all an illusion?
Let's face it. Hollywood is the industry of illusion. So I'm not disparaging the inclusivity, and it's great to see Tiffany Haddish and
Maya Rudolph
come out and present, and that's all great. Tiffany wasn't nominated, and Maya Rudolph, what roles is she being offered? I say all that to say that in terms of inclusion and in terms of Hollywood, really, I mean, again, I don't know if you looked at that report that was just released. If you look at that
actually,
report.
Actually, yeah, I did an article where
that's
I mentioned
right.
it.
Yes, you did.
Yeah.
And what am I saying? I forget who I'm
2.7% of Latinos compared to 78% of white Caucasian actors.
Right. I mean, so from where I'm sitting, this is good, but it's like it's a baby step. And it takes. Yeah, it takes a film like Black Panther to blow all these doors open for them to go, It takes a film in the time of you know, all this prejudice against Latins and Latin Americans and Mexicans for a film that celebrates Mexican culture to win Best Picture. Maybe they go, It takes Get Out to be a horror film, okay? And how much black horror filmmakers are there ever? Name like five black horror films. You'd be hard-pressed to do that.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, when I saw Get Out, I said, what was the last time you saw a black horror film? Period.
That's my point. My point is, now, what made Get Out so important is that it took the genre of horror and showed what you could do with it. What you could do with it in the hands of someone who has more to say than slashing, murder, cut up, torture porn. You put in the hands of a person of color, they're going to take that genre and do something with it. We've had
literally hundreds and hundreds of horror films come out in the last 10, 15 years. They're all pretty unmemorable and had nothing to say about anything. So to me, the real important part here, and what I'm assuming you're getting at, is this inclusion allows more diverse stories to be told. And that's where I'm really with Frances McDormand, and when she made everybody get up, all the women get up and say how these films need to be financed, and these filmmakers need to have things. That's the problem. The problem is that the industry has to reflect reality. The industry, not just the commercials, not just the presenters, but the films that are coming out, the people who are getting paid, the stories that are being told. If I sound bitter, it's
You sound like you're charged up, and I know why you're charged up. You're charged up because of the same reasons that I'm charged up. Now,
yes.
I think that we also kind of need to at the same time, as long as we're going to be critiquing, you know, what is needed, we also need to kind of reinforce that what's been happening is also very good. So, for example, somebody had asked me, I think it was yesterday through social media, you know, are you happy now? Are you happy that so many Latinos won? Because I had written an article for NBCNews.com about the absolute phenomenon of the almost eradication of the Latino actor. You know, this is the sixth year that we've seen in Oscar awards without a single Latino or Latinx actor in any of the acting categories since Demian Bichir back in 2012 for the movie A Better Life. And so I said, yeah, listen, of course I'm happy. How can I not be happy with the amount of Hispanic representation that we saw at the Oscar Awards? And even though that I can't diffuse that as being something irrelevant, it's huge. It's huge. Yes, we need more actors, but Here's what I want to say. I'm happy that Shape of Water won. But I'm also honest as a person who's a moviegoer that I don't think Shape of Water deserved that win. I think that the amount of great work that Guillermo has been doing merited a Best Director over Jordan Peele, who is his first time in making a movie. He has many more great movies until he gets a Best Director award. But Best Picture, the most relevant movie, the most important movie of 2017 was Get Out. It's the movie that everybody and anybody who had anything to say about movies, they talked about Get Out because of the impact and the ripple effect it had in social change. You know, for this, it kind of built up to what we got from Black Panther, and it started with that. And I've mentioned to you, Coco is another important film, and Black Panther is the most important film of 2018 so far. But I think Get Out should have won. I'm shocked about this. You don't think Get Out should have won?
I don't necessarily think that Get Out shouldn't have won, because I think it's a lot more relevant a film than Shape of Water. No comparison there. Though, you know, in terms of Best Picture, there definitely were films that I thought were better contenders for Best Picture than Shape of Water. But here's what I will say about Shape of Water. Okay, two things. One, and I agree with you about Guillermo getting not, you know, winning for Best Director, because I think he's definitely a great director. But I think that Shape of Water is a safe choice. Of all of the films that have come out, from I, Tonya to
Mudbound
to every film that was nominated that had social relevance, Shape of Water had the least social relevance. It had the least social relevance. It was completely bipartisan. There's nothing about it political in any way, really. Okay. And it's a quote unquote feel good film. So in my opinion, it's a safe choice to have acknowledged Get Out as best film. In my opinion, that would be the advances that we're talking about, in that people are acknowledging films like this, films like you said, that are talked about, that are significant, that mean something, that are saying something, that are addressing something.
Give me one second.
Oh, he's got something to say out here.
Yeah, hold on a second.
He's agreeing with me. Right. like what you said, right? So, yeah, just getting back to what I was saying is I do think films that are socially relevant should win Oscars. And that's how it was at one time. But that is not necessarily the case.
Let me ask you this. What is the definition of a best picture? Because for me, the definition of a best picture is when a movie is highly acclaimed and has box office numbers to back it up. So when you have both of those together, where no one can say anything bad about Get Out at all, how does that movie not win?
Well, you know, I disagree with you on part of what you're saying. I agree with you that it should have a universal acclaim. But in terms of box office, you know, you look at most of the Oscar winners, they're not necessarily the box office winners. As a matter of fact, it's very often the opposite. It's the films that made the least amount of money. 12 Years a Slave didn't make much money. Moonlight didn't make much money. You know, there are a lot of films. And if you look back at the last 25 years of Oscar, a lot of these films don't make money.
But now, if they did, though, wouldn't that reinforce the fact that it is a best picture?
Again, you know, like back in the day, like in All the President's Men, when a best picture, it just captures everybody's attention. Exactly. That those days, I think, are somewhat gone, because I think there's been a backlash against, you know, whatever's, you know, populist, quote unquote, fair. It just in terms of Get Out, as those articles, when we were talking before the Oscars and you were telling me you thought Get Out was pretty much a lock to win, I didn't think so. I had had my doubts. But then when I started reading all these articles, how older white voters refused to see it because they felt it wasn't Oscar worthy. They refused to vote for it because they felt it, quote unquote, played the race card. And,
right. It was something that I saw on Twitter. Some anonymous Oscar voter had written something. Somebody posted it. And it was a guy that was very upset that the movie had offended him. Right.
There it is. And I read that from more than one older white Oscar voter. Now, you know, that taps into something that has to do with, you know, the conscience of the country, okay, and the dominance of those, you know, we all know throughout history, whatever race of humans, whoever's dominant is not going to let that dominance go very easily, you know, whether you're, you know, the Romans, the
survival Hebrews. Of
right,
you know,
right. So people fittest. Who have been right, so people have been in control are going to want to stay in control, you know. So that doesn't surprise me. That they're not wanting to give up. But the other part of it is, too, you know, they were offended. They were offended because who wants to be reminded of no one wants to be reminded of your bias or your privilege.
Or the sins of your father.
Or the sins of your father or your own sins, the sins of your father, the sins of your ancestors. That's why historical black films never make money. OK, because nobody wants to be reminded of that, black or white. So I think that it's a tough call. You know, the audience, the you know, film viewers already voted for Get Out. OK, but the Academy and the makeup of the Academy, that's a different politics. Yeah,
they don't reflect the moviegoer. They don't reflect the press. They don't
not yet.
What not about yet. Mudbound? I'm shocked that Dee Reese, who was, I think, nominated for 4 awards, went out empty handed.
Well, I'm not. OK, I'm not. I'm not, because for 3 reasons. One, because it's Netflix. I don't think the industry necessarily wants to reward.
But Netflix was rewarded with Icarus, the best.
Yeah, but Icarus documentary is a different animal. Okay, but we're talking about what Hollywood excels at. You know the creating. You know, illusions, the stories. You know, our gross national product in America is entertainment. So Hollywood makes that, and so it, you know, something new. You know, that doesn't give in to the dominance that has been with distribution and theaters and movie and tickets and all the things that have made a quote unquote movie a movie. You know, Netflix has pissed off a lot of aspects of the industry, mm-hmm. other distributors.
Well, they're a disruptor.
They're a disruptor. So they're not going to reward the disruptor. That's one. They're two.
Completely anti-establishment.
Exactly. And so I can't see Hollywood, which is as establishment as you can possibly get, you know, even though the people who work in it, the artists, you know, may not be and may have things to say anti-establishment. But Hollywood, everything behind it, that's not going to reward it. Two, I think that, again, we're dealing with that topic again of sins of the father. You know, Mudbound is, in my opinion, that would have been a good case. If that won Best Picture, I'd have been applauding. I wouldn't have been mad that Get Out didn't win, because that's a film like Grapes of Wrath. You know, it's sort of a Grapes of Wrath of our time. It's a film. It's a uniquely American story. It's addressing some things that happen. It's not necessarily pointing a finger, but it's a powerful, powerful film. And in my opinion, it's what should make a Best Picture, a picture that is just so powerful. It grabs you by the throat and doesn't let you go. That's a Best Picture to me. So I'm. And then the third reason it didn't win, I think, also because, you know, she's new. She's new. And
but so, you know, is Jordan Peele.
Jordan Peele is new, but he's been in the business for a long time. He's got people who have grown up loving him. OK, so he's and there's been no denying the power of Get Out. You could say, oh, there are people who have been more disparaging about Mudbound. It was slow. It was this. It was that. It was depressing, whatever. To me, OK, I don't know what movie you saw, but I don't think you can't really deny, I guess, unless you're an older white Oscar voter, you can't really deny the power of Get Out. And it's also an experience in the movie theater. One thing about Netflix and watching, binge watching these things, it's something you do it with loved one. You might do it with some family, might do it with some friends, but it's a very different experience to go to a movie and see a movie and everybody is as shocked by the twists and turns as you. And it's an experience at the movie theater.
Right.
And you remember that. It's a memorable experience. It's not just a good movie. It's a memorable experience. Mudbound didn't get that.
Yeah.
Mudbound and that in some ways, I think, hurt certain films. I think it's just hurt the new.
I think it's the fact that it was on Netflix, man.
I agree. That's number
because
one.
Because I think that the association intuitively. You know, I think it's subconscious, is that when you're sitting in your living room about to watch a new release movie on Netflix, there's the sense that it looks like a TV movie. It feels like a TV movie. The phone's ringing. The dog's barking. That's not the experience you have in a movie theater. Well, maybe the phone ringing. But
yeah,
everything
exactly.
else that goes home along with the home traits is not there. So I'm sure that a lot of people are watching Mudbound and all of a sudden the phone's ringing or the door's knocking. It doesn't have that movie like experience, and I think that's probably the only fault. And I think that one of the things that affects that producers and directors and actors should kind of know going in is there's still that TV association with Netflix. That I mean, this happened, I think it was like a few years ago, there was another movie it was the one with Idris Elba that Cary Fukunaga, I think, had directed. Remember this one about the African?
Yes. Again, same thing. And again, that was earlier on in Netflix career. Yeah, they're not going to be too quick, like you said, to reward the disruptor.
Now, I do want to talk to you about, I want to move on and talk to you a little bit about the ripple effect of last night's award show. This is something that I've been kind of racking my head. I've asked several other, you know, culture critics in the business about, will things change now, Mike? And it's a two-pronged question for Hispanics, for people of color overall. Will we see a brand new Hollywood beginning today? How will this visually manifest itself? From all this love and rejoicing of diversity and inclusion, will most movies now be Black and Latino? Will more Latino actors be hired more than ever before? Will Latino stories be told because the best picture was done by a Mexican? Will Mexican movies be the talk of 2018 and 19 and into the 2000s? What is the ripple effect of this Oscars into the rest of cinema?
Is this a rhetorical question?
No. This is a question that I ask you.
No, I was kidding. All right. Well, here's two things. One, and I have to bring up just a couple of points because we touched upon these before when we were not recording. So I'll just reiterate them here to give context to my answer. One, Rita Moreno wore the dress she wore in 1962 when she won Best Supporting Actress for West Side Story, which I'm assuming we're going to mention in a little bit too, mm-hmm. the remake. But since 1962, and I asked you, how many other Latina actresses have actually won an Oscar?
Penelope Cruz for Vicky Cristina Barcelona as a Best Supporting Actress.
Exactly. So only one in since 1962. Nothing's changed since she wore that dress. Not much.
Well, and here to reiterate, to kind of reinforce what you're saying, no Latina has ever won Best Actress in the 90 years of the Oscars.
That's it. Okay. That answers that question. So, two, I think the possibility of change only comes for two reasons in Hollywood, in my opinion. Two things can really change things. One, in the case of something like Black Panther and Get Out, okay, and Hollywood realizing, oh, black stories will make money, so we'll make some. That's how the Blaxploitation era was launched. When Melvin Van Peebles made Sweet Sweet Back's Badass Sound song out of the system, Hollywood was like, oh, we got to go after some of that money, and that's what will happen. So Hollywood always follows the money. So if money's being made, okay, they may start doing that. That's one. Two, okay, what Frances McDormand talked about, the inclusion rider, I think that that's very significant. I think it's significant because what it essentially says, I don't know how many of your listeners heard it and how much you know about it, but essentially says that...
Yeah, what is inclusion rider?
All right, the inclusion rider basically means that you as the star, okay, as the star of the film, have the right to say, I want X amount of the crew to be women. I want X amount of the crew to be people of color. I want X amount to be LGBT. And you will sign on if those things happen.
But see, it now, sounds to me like it's strong arming the studio and the director.
Absolutely. Yes, absolutely. Yes, it is.
But that's
and you know
of,
why?
That's kind of messed up though, man.
No, it's not. No, it's not. It's messed up that it has to be that way. But hello, why do we have to have civil rights laws? Why couldn't we just be civil? Why do we have to have laws that are created for minorities and inclusions? Because they wouldn't hire them if they didn't. They had to make it a law. They have to strong arm the existing structure to make it comply with change. And you are tuned to listener-sponsored radio WBAI, and I'm talking with Jack Rico, who is the host of Totally Relevant podcast and is a film critic on Good Morning America and a bunch of other things. And we've been talking, actually, this is a recording I did on his podcast today, the day after the Oscars. But you're tuned to listener-sponsored radio, WBAI, 99.5 FM, and we are still in our marathon. So what I encourage you to do is to make a pledge to WBAI. What we really need are some WBAI buddies. And what WBAI buddy basically means, that if you've never heard this show before and you're just listening now and you got pulled in by the conversation, I'm Mike Sargent. I'm talking with Jack Rico. We're talking about the Oscars. We're talking about film. We're talking about inclusion. We've got a lot to go on this conversation. In a little while, I'll bring in Byron and maybe a special guest or two. But here's the deal. If you enjoy Night Shift, if you enjoy WBAI, if you enjoy Free Speech Radio, you want to make a pledge right now. You can go online to give, the number two, give to WBAI.org and just go there. Or to go to the WBAI.org page. Just go to that website right now. There's so many ways that you can donate, that you can contribute. If you like the music that you've been hearing in the background and you'll be hearing later on the show, we call it DGM. It's Winter DGM 2018. You can make a $35 pledge and you can get that CD sent to you with over 88 tracks, over 6.5 hours of music. But if you're enjoying this show, if you're enjoying what we do here on Night Shift, if you're enjoying what public radio does for you, then make a pledge. That's just the bottom line. Because if they don't have to, why should they? Why should they make why should they give Latinos or blacks opportunities to make films when they're going to come see the white films? Why should they? Why do they have to create a black hero if we're going to go see the white heroes? Why? Why do they have to create a Latino hero if the Latinos will go see the white hero and the black hero? Why? Why should they have to? They don't. Okay, so you have to strong arm them. So that's the second thing. The third thing, I think, is as more things like this become successful, you know, there's other stuff in the pipeline, you know, and, you know, we've talked about Afrofuturism, you know, Octavia Butler is a famous black science fiction author who's no longer with us, and she was a friend of mine. A number of her projects are being made. You know, we'll see how well A Wrinkle in Time does, even though it was at least directed and starring a primarily black cast, even if it wasn't originally visioned that way by the original author, Marion Dangle. So I'm just saying that no, I don't think we're going to see a new Hollywood. I think we will start to see some change. And I think that change will come from the strong arming and from seeing that there's gold and then there are hills.
You know, it's interesting because, you know, I hear you talk about this change, and there's a couple of things that I'm still very skeptical about. You know, I love sort of the fanfare. I think I might have told you the Coco performance that happened last night with Natalia Lafourcade, Miguel, and Gael Garcia Bernal, which, by the way, everybody was saying that Gael Garcia Bernal was off key the whole song, right? I'm like, A, he's not a singer, and B, the character that he voiced in the film was not a singer either, necessarily. He was a musician, but I think he was more of a guitarist, et cetera, et cetera. And that was the whole sort of bit, that he didn't sing well. So, guys, chill out. The guy's not a professional singer. But when the song was performed, half in Spanish, half in English, my wife cried. Wow. And I asked her, I said, why are you crying? She goes, number one, because I love the song. I love the movie. But number three, it's because of what it represents. And when she says that, she's talking about peeling the layers of psychological and emotional inferiority layers that the Latino culture has had to extract. Like, you know, we're talking real right now, man. Let me say a couple of things. You know, I had written this article, and there was a PhD on Twitter that had said to me, hey, I really liked your article. I think you had some valid arguments, but you should not, you know, bring in any African-American references to this article whatsoever. You know, do not compare. We're all in this together. And I agree with her. And what she was mentioning, the reference that she was mentioning, was actually not even a reference that I wrote, created. It wasn't an opinion. It was George Clooney had made a remark where he said, if you think African Americans have it so bad, Hispanics have it worse. And this was something he had said last year to the Hollywood Reporter in 2016 when he was asked about this new movement of inclusion and diversity in Hollywood. I have to bring up African Americans when it comes to Latinos because we kind of been in this struggle together trying to be included, except that, you know, while African Americans have succeeded in reaching certain milestones, we're still in the back, still trying to pound on that door, trying to get in, kind of like what Guillermo del Toro said when he kind of took his Oscar award, pushed it in front of the microphone and said, this Oscar award is a door. Kick it in and come in. And I was like, exactly. But here's the problem. And here's the problem. I congratulate that Mexican directors, Latino directors like Sebastian Lelo from Chile winning yesterday, and Adrian Molina, a Mexican-American LGBT, Q one for Coco as well. But the problem is they're not hiring Latino actors. What was the last time that Guillermo del Toro hired a Latino actor? What was the last time that Alejandro González Iñárritu, Alfonso Cuarón hired a Latino actor? And this is a call out to them. And then no one wants to talk about it. That's why I have this podcast, because there's just, you know, unfortunately, as a Latino critic, as a Latino press person, Latino journalist, there is this pressure to have to not be negative at all about the Hispanic market, because we've been at each other's throats for so long. The Mexicans don't like the Argentinians, and the soccer games really show the division amongst the Hispanics. And when Donald Trump was elected president, 39% of Hispanics voted for him. What's going on? We're all divided. So more than division, we need unity. And I think what happens is that starts rolling into the journalists, where we're supposed to be objective, but we become subjective. And we start writing positive stories all the time about Hispanics and not calling out the problems. And the way I see it, Mike, is talk about the problems so we can finally solve them, so we can finally fix them. But if we always say everything is peachy, and the Oscars was great because look at the amount of Hispanic representation. There's music, there's directors winning, there's foreign films winning. But where is the actor? Where is the Latino movie star that's a bankable star for a movie over $100 million and his salary is 30 to 50? Where is that Latino superhero that Marvel should be having? There is not one Latino Marvel superhero, neither DC or Marvel. We're fucking invisible, man. We don't exist.
And you're still tuned to Listen to Sponsored Radio, WBAI, and that's Jack Rico and myself, Mike Sargent, talking about the industry, talking about representation. If you're enjoying this conversation, please remember what you're listening to. You're listening to public radio. You're listening to a radio that is not influenced by corporate interests. It has nothing to do with money. That has nothing to do with you. It has nothing to do with money that's being made off of you. We're asking for your support. We're begging in a lot of ways for your support. But please become a WBAI buddy. Go online. Give to WBAI.org. Give the number to WBAI.org. Become a WBAI buddy while you're listening to this show, while you're enjoying this. Support it as your mind hopefully is swirling and you're taking in everything that's being said. Enjoy it, take it in, and support.
I couldn't agree with you more, and if you want me to respond to that, I have a lot to say.
Yeah, so just to recap here, I don't think that things are going to change anytime soon for us. And this goes, this is a whole other podcast episode of Latinos not being united in any cause, man. And that is because we're fragmented. We're united by language, but we're not united by culture. Argentinians are very different than Colombians. Colombians are very different than Costa Ricans and Spaniards, who some want to be Latino or some think of themselves as they're not Latinos. They're European white people who happen to speak Spanish. And so they don't get the struggles. They were the ones that were conquering. I'm not sure if you saw John Leguizamo's Latin History for Morons. He goes into this whole summary of how Spaniards, even though they're the conquerors, man. They're the ones that stole, raped, pillaged everything else. This was the Columbans of the Native Americans. So we have, and by the way, we also don't have real history in America. We haven't had the struggles that the African American community has had. So we have so many challenges to overcome, and it's great, but I think that this might be the peak. This might be the peak. What you saw yesterday at the Oscar Awards last night, that might be the peak of Hispanics in cinema, at least for the next 3 to 5 years, maybe even 10. The day I see a Latino action movie star, The Rock, a Robert Downey Jr., when we see a Latino superhero at Marvel, a la Black Panther, a la Iron Man, a la Thor, man, that's when I'm going to be very hopeful of the future.
I couldn't agree with you more in every single thing you said. And I'll say a couple things there, too, because I agree with you. And to illustrate your point, part of the problem is, I think, and I'm gonna relate it. I agree with you that you have to acknowledge what the African Americans, because they're not just all African. There's West Indian, there's African, there's blacks from the South. And they are definitely more unified than Latinos in America. But the two ways of being successful, okay, are either staying in being off key until everybody's like, all right, well, that's your style and you're David Bowie and and there it is, or you try and fit in. And I think a lot of Latinos, especially when they've gotten in a position, they're trying to fit in. Jennifer right. Lopez will say, I'm not a Latina actress. I'm an actress who happens to be Latina.
Oh, that's what Andy Garcia says. Did you see that interview that I did with Andy Garcia? Almost scolded me because I called him a Hispanic actor. He was almost offended by it, man.
Well, now you see, that's the thing. They are. And I was going to mention Andy Garcia because what's his most money-making roles? He was not playing a Latino. He was playing an Italian.
Right.
Okay.
Godfather
3 any number of the films when he was a commercially bankable star. So, but the difference between Black Panther and every other Will Smith, Denzel Washington, all the movies that a lot of these black actors, science fiction movies that black actors have been in, it's where they're characters who happen to be black versus a character who is proudly African, proud of his culture, proud of his heritage. He ain't trying to fit in. Okay. That's what makes it so different. And that's what is not happening. When Penelope Cruz and Antonio Banderas hit Hollywood, Hollywood had no idea what to do with them.
You know, it's interesting that you say that because they didn't know what to do with them. I mean, and they came in with very heavy accents. They came in with very heavy accents. That was around the same time.
I mean, they're both great actors. They're both great actors. Antonio Banderas, I've seen him do stuff where I go, oh my God, he'll do something silently. And you go, oh my God, what a fantastic actor he is. But, you know, he's stuck doing, you know, B movies and whatnot now because, again, now he's older now. He's not quite the leading man he once was, but he should have had easily the career that, let me just not name names, let's just say a lot less talented white counterparts have had.
Absolutely. You know, and that brings me to the whole point about, see, the fraction in the Hispanic market is, as happy as I am, look, I'm Colombian American. So my parents are Colombian. I was born in New York. So I identify more as an American than a Colombian. And you can see certain things that other people can't see as a Hispanic. So for example, Antonio, Penelope, and Javier Bardem are Spaniards. They're Spaniards. Their whole view of the world is very different than a Latin American. Very different.
Absolutely.
And then when you have the Spaniard, the Latin American, then you have to take into consideration the U.S.-born Latino, which is me. And the one who identifies more as an American than a Latin American and obviously as a Spaniard. That the only thing that unites us is the language, right? But U.S.-born Latinos, some of them don't even speak Spanish. I've met a lot of them. Way too many more than I thought I would. And I think that the conversation slowly within the press, and I know that I've been one of the catalysts for it, is where is the U.S. Latino in any of this that has more of a shot to make it into the Hollywood business because we're born within the fabric of the country, as opposed to having to get visas and be afraid of being deported and the papers and overcoming language and overcoming immigration stories. We don't have to do that. We can create a romantic comedy, an action movie. So where the hell are the U.S. Latino filmmakers? And if they're there, then why aren't they getting the opportunities? And so those are many of the questions that I see, and hopefully I can impart on you so you can start seeing those too.
Well, I will say this, and I definitely want to recommend him to you to interview him because he will just, you know, you guys will not stop talking. You know, the most successful a U.S.-born Latino filmmaker is a filmmaker named Frank Reyes. Does he get the love he should and the opportunities he should from the community or from Hollywood? Absolutely not.
Now, what you think that's because he's creating way too many urban films?
Well, that brings into a whole other conversation. Like, oh, is he presenting, you know, a positive image of the Latino? Yeah. Well, again, I would love for you guys to get into it. But like you said, everybody, unfortunately, there are conflicting agendas and conflicting views on what Latinos should and should not do, how they should and should not be represented, how they should and should not assimilate into the culture and what it is. I mean, like you said, it's pretty sad, the state of Latino film. And that's not to say there aren't talented Latino filmmakers and Latino actors out there, but in terms of representation, those statistics don't lie. Okay, that report is sad that this is 2018. She wore that dress in 62.
Yeah, I really like the sort of the statement that you were making that I had not really thought about it. That and I'm assuming here that what you're saying is that the reason she wore that wasn't necessarily as a tribute to her wearing it when she last won it. That there was a much more dimensional aspect that was saying something about having that dress on last night.
You know, that's open to interpretation. Only Rita Moreno knows. But that was my instant take on it. When I saw it and I saw her standing there getting the award, she's a real Latina. And the other actors who were playing Latinos who were not really Latin, I thought about that. And I thought about how much has not changed in that amount of time.
Yeah, I think that the dress was literally saying nothing has changed. It's the same dress.
That's what it said to me. Exactly.
It's like, it's still 1962.
Exactly. That's what it said to me. Now, you know, that's just my interpretation.
No, it's a, I think it's a great interpretation. And I think there was something going on there. Let's talk about, before we wrap up, let's talk a little bit about another part of the continuation and the future of Hispanics and inclusion and diversity in film.
And you're still tuned to listener-sponsored radio, WBAI. You're hearing a conversation between myself and Jack Rico, who hosts a show, a podcast called Totally Relevant. And you can see him on Good Morning America and a number of other networks, a number of other shows. You can find Jack Rico. Where are you going to get a name like that? We got a chance to talk here on the air, online, on podcast about diversity in Hollywood film, its impact with Latinos, people of color, something you don't get to hear on other radio stations, something you don't get to see on TV, something that needs to be talked about, something that needs to happen, something, conversations and things that need to be having an outlet and vehicle for, and that's what WBAI and public radio can do. So make your support, make your pledge right now. Support WBAI. Give to WBAI.org. Go online right now. You can do it from your phone. You can do it from anything. There's a million ways for you to support. But become a WBAI buddy. That's what we're really looking for. We're looking for 10 during this program. We're on from midnight till 3 a.m. You can make a pledge right now for $10 a month, $25 a month, $50 a month. And think about it. You pay a lot more for everything else in your life that is essential. And if listening to the radio and listening to Free Speech Radio is essential to you, or if you just happen to tune in to the station and you're like, wow, what is this? Believe me, there's so much more. We're on 24/7. We have programmers. We have weekly shows like Night Shift, which is on Mondays from midnight till 3 a.m. They're all other kinds of programs. I'm the film critic here at WBAI. I also do a show on Friday mornings. It's part of the morning show. It's called Real World, and that's where I get to talk about film. I appear on PBS and Fox News and talk about film. But again, WBAI gives me the forum and the space and the place where I can do what I do here on Night Shift with Byron and Joe Masiri and Elena and the mystery guests and Chris when he's on the phone, and he'll return one day, don't worry. And all of that. So if you're enjoying the show, if you're enjoying all the conversation, if you're enjoying the representation, if you happen to be a person of color or a person who is not necessarily conservative, whether you're Asian or Hindu or Muslim or Latino or a Latina, if you're someone who is not necessarily part of the dominant culture, you want to listen to this. And if you're someone who happens to have been born in the race and sex of the dominant culture, you know what? And you love hearing about stuff like this, you love learning about other cultures, and you respect and enjoy and support, give to WBAI.org. Make a $10 pledge. Make a $25 pledge. It's only $25 a month. That's something you can afford. That's reasonable. If we get enough of those, we can shorten our marathons by half because we know we have the money coming in. That's our goal. Go to WBAI.org. There are a lot of ways to support. If you're enjoying the music, we call it DGM, stands for Damn Good Music. You can make your sport Damn Good Music. Look for Winter DGM 2018. You'll enjoy all this music. Stay tuned. I'm going to finish my conversation or go over to more of my conversation with Jack Rico.
Now, you've heard recently that Steven Spielberg is rebooting West Side Story, the musical. The great, great, I think it was nominated for like 13, 14 Oscars. It's considered one of the great movies and great musicals in the history of cinema. For some weird reason, Steven Spielberg, a white Jewish director, has decided that he wants to redo West Side Story, which is, for the most part, perfect.
I agree. They could re-release that right now in 3D. People could see.
Exactly. Two things that I mentioned this to you off mic when we were talking beforehand. That the two things that the only reason I can see anyone redoing West Side Story are for these two reasons. One is to get the authenticity of the characters correct with the actors, to kind of sink in culturally where they should be from, and that's what he wants to do. And then the second thing, what was the second thing that I had to
wait? Did he say that's what he wants to do?
Oh yeah, he put out a whole audition call back. He put out a whole like audition. What do you call those things that you put on Backpage, classifieds, for
open calls.
He put out an open call for Latinos to play Latino characters. He wants to make this really authentic. And I think, that the second thing, actually, Mike, let's do this whole thing because I.
Sure.
Let me start from the beginning. 3, 2, 1. I'm not sure if you've been hearing what Steven Spielberg now wants to do. He wants to redo West Side Story, the musical, one of the greatest pieces of cinema of the last 100 years. And, you know, I'm against it, but there's only two reasons for me that you would want to get this right. And I think that those two reasons are the following. One is to get the authenticity of the characters right, because Natalie Wood was never Hispanic, obviously. Many of the characters there that weren't Hispanic, and I think they want to do that right. They want to get real Latino actors to play those roles. And then secondly, I always thought that one of the big problems with the movie was that the actors just weren't good singers. I had a lot of problems in just even hearing the soundtrack today when they sing. I leave the instrumentals, but I cannot listen to the vocals of that for too long. So he might want to get Latino actors, but then you had brought up the point, what Latino actors are you going to get that are bankable enough to do this? And I thought that was interesting. I mean, the only person that you have to start off the whole movie with is, I'm sure that a call already went out to Lin-Manuel Miranda to be part of the musical soundtrack and to be in the movie and maybe even a lead. That's going to be interesting to see what happens. But how do you see this playing out?
Well, I will say this. I agree with, again, pretty much everything you said. I think the only I don't think that's a great reason to redo it. But I think it's you coined it right. You say to get this right. So to film a story about Latino gangs in the 50s in New York and cast it with Latinos, it shouldn't be groundbreaking, but that would be groundbreaking. You know, there have been opportunities, you know, like I mentioned when Ridley Scott redid, you know, Ten Commandments, you know, they could have cast it with, you know, what he said, who's going to pay to go see? Well, you know, again, you know, there's no Latino actor, okay, really, that's a bigger name than Spielberg or as big as a name as Spielberg. So you're going to go see it because of what it is. You're going to see it because it's Spielberg and because it's West Side Story, and you want to see what he did with it. And if he updates it and there's great camera moves and there's great fantastic choreography and they update the songs a little and they modernize them, it could be very exciting. And he is an artist to want to stretch himself. That could be exciting too. Okay. So it could be exciting, but the most exciting aspect would be what you said, to cast it ethnically correct and to cast it with people who are up to the task of that. Spielberg can be a star maker. you know? So I think that that's the only reason to do it. Though I will say, I think you could re-release the original West Side Story in 3D now. People go see it. But do you think that
a West Side Story musical by Steven Spielberg, casting unknowns, would be a wise move for Spielberg?
You know,
because we're living in that American Idol, The Voice era where everyone can act, everyone can sing, everyone can dance, and there's a lot. The Voice just did a Puerto Rico edition where you can just take that whole group of singers and put them in West Side Story, and no one would know the difference.
Well, here's the thing. That's the thing. I mean, I think Spielberg has had an interest in Broadway for a while. I mean, I don't know if you watched the show Smash that he produced.
I loved Smash.
I loved Smash, too.
It was my guilty pleasure.
It was a guilty pleasure. I loved it. I love where it was going. I love the idea that the TV series could have turned into a piece on Broadway. I love that whole concept. And obviously, he's not quite let that go. So, you know, there have been some great musicals, and he grew up during that time when they made great musicals. And nowadays we really only have, you know, Baz Luhrmann, who's kind of hit or miss when it comes to musicals.
Oh, my God. Did you see that Netflix show that he did? Man, epic in terms of production.
Yeah, I heard it like the singing at the Academy Awards was off key. That's what I heard.
Yeah.
I didn't see it, but I heard.
I saw two episodes and I had to turn it off.
Oh, really? Yeah. Wow. All right. Well, so that being said, I mean, I would love to see him, you know, revitalize for a younger audience seeing a musical, because they're, with the exception of La La Land, and La La Land is, you know, there really hasn't been a musical that has really, you know, captured the younger audience, though Glee was hugely popular. And it was largely redoing songs that were popular songs, and, you know, that whole cast, they were all unknowns when that started, but they were all just very talented. So I think it could work. It could. And let's just hope he's more successful than Clint Eastwood at stretching himself.
Yeah, I also think that Steven Spielberg is hit and miss as well. I thought that somebody said, why? Well, I read an article, you know, some of these guys, they just kind of create stories because the editor tells them, hey, listen, can you just create anything that's a little controversial? And one of those things, why wasn't Steven Spielberg nominated for The Post? It, you know, it's nominated for Best Picture. Why not Best Director? It's Steven Spielberg. And I'm going, because he called that one in. He has said in Q&As, because I've been in those Q&As, where the movie was rushed to make it out in time.
I don't know. I disagree with you on that.
What,
you know,
Steven Spielbergisms did you see in his directorial traits in that film that say Steven Spielberg?
See, I didn't look at it from that standpoint at all.
Any director could have done that. Any director could have done that.
I disagree with you. I'll tell you why I disagree with you. Because I think, for instance, some years ago, Ron Howard, who I'm not a huge fan of, who I think is kind of a low-rent Spielberg, Ron Howard made he made The Paper. And The Paper for a long time...
Is that the one with Michael Keaton?
That's the one with Michael Keaton. Paper for a long time was one of those scripts that had been bouncing around Hollywood, had gotten a lot of play. And that was back when I was, you know, budding filmmaker, writing screenplays. And so every screenplay that was getting heat, you heard about, you know. Mm-hmm. And that was what the term was, a bulletproof script. The script is just so good that nobody could screw it up. And, you know, Ron Howard almost did. It was a very mediocre movie with a fantastic script.
And a fantastic cast.
Fantastic cast, fantastic script. And the movie was like, you know, the moment when it should have been stuff that you're just caught up in it, that whole moment in the restaurant, it was like, I felt that The Post, to me, did what that movie should have done. I thought The Post was a classic. I thought it was great. I thought he, is that somebody buzzing?
Yeah.
Okay. I thought he did a great job. I thought that for me, that movie completely worked. I loved so many things about it. I could go on effusively. So we have to agree to disagree.
Well, Mike, it's been an interesting, week, at least so far. Cinema, I think, has been changed, at least for a while.
Wait. Before you go, what do you think about West Side Story? Do you think it's going to be successful? No. I want to know what Jack Rico thinks.
I don't think it's going to be successful. Look, I have problems with it right off the bat. Why
Steven
Spielberg? Once again, why is a Caucasian dictating inclusiveness on film? It bothers me that it can't be a Latin American or U.S. Latino director. I know they don't exist, but who the heck is building them up to become the next Steven Spielberg? You know, it's funny. I'm not sure if you heard about the little bit of the controversy about Adrian Molina. Adrian Molina is the co-director of Coco, and he wasn't nominated for an Oscar. So it was Lee Unkrich who won it, along with Darla K. Anderson, the producer. And even though you might have seen Adrian Molina holding an Oscar, I think it was Darla K. Anderson's. And he wasn't nominated. So he didn't get an Oscar. And the other thing was, will they allow him to speak? That was the whole other sort of debate that was going on in the internet. Let Adrian Molina speak at the Oscars. Just the fact that that's being even talked about is depressing to me. So I understand that all we got is a white man who's helping us out, man. Helping us out, get more Latinos in film. Lee Unkrich came up with the idea of Coco. It wasn't Adrian Molina. It was no one else. I had asked Lee Unkrich in one of the podcast episodes, I think it's number 63, where I had asked him, who came up with this idea? He says, I did. The way Pixar works, and for anybody who doesn't know how Pixar works in making a movie and getting it greenlit, the director has to come up with the idea. They don't give them the idea. They don't just hire them for the story. The director comes up with the story, the concept, and then he starts working on it. Then they greenlight it. And he brought in Adrian Molina halfway through the process. And that's when they, some people said, oh, so he's kind of like an honorary Oscar guy here. He didn't come up with the idea. How do you create a Mexican film by a white director without having any input of Mexican? So he had to do it, man. So now here we go again. Between white directors hiring Latinos, right? And Latino directors not hiring Latinos actors. Jesus, man, this becomes this yarn which is very difficult to unfold, man, and unwrap. I have problems with those things, but at the end of the day, if I'm looking at my odds, and the only way we're going to get into Hollywood in terms of Latino actors is by Steven Spielberg hiring us, then I'm going to have to go with that. But that is not ideal for me. And so, number one, I think that Broadway people are going to be like, are you crazy for rebooting this movie? No way. I'm not going to go see it. So I think a lot of people are going to be negative about it right off the bat. I think that what kind of Latino talent is going to get that we haven't already discovered? Is it going to be mediocre? Is it going to be brand new stars? There's so many enigmas, there's so many questions more than answers that I'm right at this moment, I have to see a lot more. I have to see the idea fleshed out. I have to see the vision where he's taking this. How much is Lin-Manuel Miranda involved in this, if he's even going to be in the film? I'm not sure if you know the story about In the Heights and Universal Pictures.
Talk to me.
In the Heights was the first musical that Lin-Manuel Miranda had created, and it won the Tony, okay?
That I remember. I remember right. All that.
It was a New York story about Dominicans, Puerto Ricans, Latinos living in Washington Heights here in New York City, Uptown Manhattan. He wins the award, and everybody started saying, hey, when are they going to make the movie? So when he started creating Hamilton, and it was already kind of just playing it to the President Obama and concerts here and there, Universal Pictures and Miranda's team had gone to Universal and had started talking about making it into a feature-length film. And what they wanted to do with this was to bring in every single big-name actor and singer into the film. Shakira was dropped as a name. Beyoncé was talked about as one of the characters. Jennifer Lopez, who even though was, I think at the time was 38, 40, 42 years old, she wanted to be the love interest in the film. There was talk whether Lin-Manuel Miranda was going to be a part of it. Wilmer Valderrama was coming. Every single Hispanic name that you can think of, even if they weren't actors, they were going to be in this movie. The problem was that Universal Pictures said, we're only going to give you like $5 million to make the film. And don't quote me on the number, but it was something low. And they said, no, no, no. Kenny Ortega came in. I was at the Four Seasons in L.A., and I bumped into Kenny Ortega and Wilmer Valderrama having lunch there. And it was around the time that In the Heights was being talked about. So I was like, okay, I see what they're going here. And unfortunately, they never did anything with it because everybody was asking for an arm and a leg in terms of salary, in terms of rights, maybe equity in the box office stake, everything else. And Universal said, listen, we don't know if diversity is going to work in film. We don't know if people are going to go watch this film. Obviously, you know, they have eggs on their face now. And I think an In the Heights film would work. Maybe it's past its time. And maybe Hamilton should be the one that gets a feature length treatment. But this is the problem, my man. This is the problem of why I don't think that West Side Story is going to work. Especially with someone like Steven Spielberg, who doesn't understand the Latino market. I don't know if it's going to be genuine. Even if he does bring them in, I'll applaud him for that. But ultimately, it's the execution of how that plays off is what I'm going to be looking at. Did it work? Did you discover somebody new? Was the music even better than before? Was the choreography better than before? Were the characters really authentic? Don't give me a Mexican actor talking like a Puerto Rican. If you're going to get a Puerto Rican actor, get him to play the Puerto Rican character. There needs to be some sort of somebody, some Hispanic consultant, advisor, co-director. Somebody needs to come in and say, here's what you need to do. And they need to get folks, just like Pixar did it. Lee Unkrich gave me the whole breakdown of how they did the research. They brought in Mexican consultants, 4, 5, 15 of them, to come in and just do focus groups. If he can do it like that, then maybe we get somewhere. But I'm iffy about it, man.
Okay. Well, I needed to know what you thought. I agree with everything you said. And like I said, I think it could work, but I do think it's a bit of a long shot, and I agree. I mean, you know, he's one of the few directors who could pull it off in terms of having almost no names or having, you know, big names in smaller parts, you know. And, you know, I'm reminded, you know, I'd read about how they did this too and how they brought in all these consultants and focus groups. But I'm also reminded of, I interviewed Reginald Hudlin, Django Unchained, when he produced that, you know, and I asked him, you know, white guy doing a movie about a slave revenge, blah, 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 blah. And he says, well, look, who else besides Quentin Tarantino, white or black, could have gotten this film made? Yeah. And he's right. And he's right. And, you know, though, unfortunately, Spielberg, who I do think his heart is in the right place, and I think if there's anybody who's going to try and do it right, you know, but we all know he's tried. He's tried with Color Purple. He tried with Amistad. Neither of those films really, let's just say, they definitely didn't ignite the Academy. They didn't ignite super with audiences. So, you know, if you call it hit or miss, I don't know if you'd call it a hit. But again, will audiences embrace it? Will Latinos embrace it? That's my big question.
I think if you do something of quality, first of all, it's not a Latino story. It's a New York story.
You want to live in this lousy world? Play it cool. I want to get even.
Get cool.
I want to bust cool.
I want to go.
Go cool. Boy, boy, crazy boy. Get cool, boy. Got a rocket in your pocket. Keep coolie cool, boy. Don't get hot, 'cause man, you've got some high times ahead. Take it slow, and daddy-o, you can live it up and die in bed. Boy, boy, crazy boy. Stay loose, boy. Breathe. Ease it, buzz it, easy does it. Turn off the juice, boy. Go mad, go, but not like a yo-yo schoolboy. Just play it cool, boy. Real cool. Easy action. Cool it, A-Rab. Cool it, cool it.
One thing that I've been telling movie studios, because sometimes they give me a call, you know, the marketing department say, hey, you know, just interested in knowing your thoughts on this. Can you come see this movie? Like, they did the same thing with Death Wish for some reason. And I said, all right, cool. They wanted a Latino perspective on it. I said, sure. You know, one of the things that they always call you about is like, well, do you think they're Latinos don't go out to see Latino stories. They just go out to see great stories. It doesn't matter if there's a Latino involved. Now, that's the movie-going concept. That's their perspective. But what we're talking about here is don't leave it up to the moviegoers to dictate social changes. Leave it up to us, the media, the critics, the ones who have more of a sense of the pulse of what real change in America looks like. And that is having a director. Listen, how would you have liked, how would this have rolled off of you if Black Panther was directed by a white guy? Because he's the only guy that could have gotten that movie made. But everything else about it is black. How would you have felt about that?
No, I agree with you. I agree. And I think, you know, you were asking earlier about
that's how
change.
I feel.
I agree with you 100%. I agree with you 100%. But right now, that's the reality. The reality is their name. I mean, if Guillermo del Toro decided he wanted to do it at this point, he might be able to get it done. But I can't see why he would want to.
He's never done a musical.
No. And I can't see why he would want to. This is not a story that would resonate with him. This is not the kind of thing he likes. Monster movies. That's his thing.
I can see Alejandro González Iñárritu because he sort of alluded to it with Birdman.
Maybe, yes.
Right? There
yes,
was allusions was brought, to a there was allusions, theatrical, yes. maybe musical type of thing going on.
I agree.
But he's the only guy that can pull that off. And so I think that when Guillermo del Toro and the three Amigo directors decide to hire Latino actors and to finally do crossover, mainstream, reverse inclusive stories, like Kumail Nanjiani said, you know, it's just great what he said. He basically said, listen, I grew up watching white movies and I related to them. Now it's time for white moviegoers to relate to my Pakistani Indian stories, right? Middle Eastern stories. That is that was so truthful that I said, why can't our Latino stories be looked at in the same way? Why don't you relate to those? So we just need more stories that sort of upend the status quo of the storytelling machine of the way it's being told. And I think that we can learn a lot from what black filmmakers are doing and black screenwriters are doing, where they're creating stories that resonate with everyone. Actually, you know who's the only guy that can pull this off? In terms, not for the West Side Story musical, but we need to pay more attention to him and we need to know how he does things more. It's Robert Rodriguez. There's a U.S. Latino director creating U.S. stories that happen to have a Latino angle from it, whether it's the lead actor or where there's a side story. His films feel like Latino but American. And, you know, for some reason, this guy can't just seem... He's hit a ceiling and can't seem to get past that ceiling.
Yes.
Let's see how the future treats him. But I think that that's someone that needs to be more talked about. We need to see more movies from him. And he needs to create his successor. He needs to...
I would see Robert Rodriguez directing West Side Story. I would go see that.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
It sounds off-brand.
It sounds off-brand, but it would be fun. Because all his films are fun. There's fun. There's an enthusiasm about film and filmmaking and film storytelling. And I like the energy he puts into his films.
Robert Rodriguez and Lin-Manuel Miranda. Just that alone is so odd. That sounds weird, man. That just doesn't sound right.
Yes, it does. Yes, it does. I love it. I love it, though. I love it.
All right, Mike. Thank you so much. Great talking to you. Incredible conversation. Post breakdown of the Oscars 2018. Hope you guys listen. If you guys have any opinions, please leave it in your reviews. Tweet at us at Jack Reek Official. Mike, where can people reach out to you if they want to give you a shout out?
Well, they want to give me a shout out on Twitter. It's at Mike on Screen. Or you can go on my late night show, Night Shift. You can go on Facebook, NITESHIFT, and see the weirdness that I cover there.
Michael Jai White. It's so funny that you're calling me. Hey, man, how are you, man?
Good, man. How you doing?
It's so funny. All right. So, let me start this. You're tuned to Listener Sponsored Radio, WBAI, and I'm speaking with Michael Jai White. Yeah, we all love Black Panther, but let's face it, one of the first black heroes on screen was played by Michael Jai White. So, Michael Jai White, man, how the hell are you? Tell me what you got going.
Well, I'm good, and I got my next foray into the Black Dynamite universe, which is called Outlaw Johnny Black, which is a Western version. So this is going to be a fun ride, and for those who liked Black Dynamite and those kind of movies, I'm bringing that back. And so I'm doing a live Facebook post from the real Michael Jai White tomorrow at 2 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. I guess that's 5 o'clock your time.
Yeah.
And we're going to do this thing. I'm doing this fan-funded thing where I'm getting the whole crowd involved, and people could, you know, get parts in the movie and do a lot of fun things that I got going on.
Now, when you say parts in the movie, you're doing a Western now. There's so many unicorn things about this. There have been very, very few black Westerns. Tell me a little bit, because and let me just also say that the concept of cowboy as opposed to cattleman had something to do with cowboys weren't really a bunch of white guys riding on horses, now were they?
That's right. Yeah, they were black. Cowboys were black.
That's right.
Exactly, you know, in a derogatory fashion, but, you know, as you could probably put together, you know, that's where it came from.
Yeah.
You know, who else was were dealing with the cows? You know,
that's for sure.
Well,
now tell me part of the vision for putting Black Dynamite in that situation, and what made you want to be a part of this?
Well, see, because of learning from Black Dynamite and how it transpired, a lot of times, you know, our stuff is not embraced the way it should be in the studio. The studio systems may not see what they have, and they don't know how to market certain things. As you see, Black Dynamite became a cult hit because of word of mouth, and people refused to let that movie die, and it became a cult hit, you know? And so this time around, where I'm, you know, controlling more of my own brand, I've been doing movies around the world and stuff, and so with this movie, I had 6 offers from, you know, different studio type of things to finance the movie, and I said, no, I want to do this. I'm going to start this with the fan base, and I'm going to get this done independently so I could thank the fans myself, you know, and have them a part of the whole scenario so we can kind of change things, you know. So with this, you know, we're going to have, like, giveaways. We're going to have things where fans can get, like, T-shirts, belt buckles, all that stuff. This movie's going to happen anyway, but I'm gonna put it in the hands of the fans that have something to do with it. And so, I mean, it's something I'm trying to bring back is a community aspect to the movies. You know, we got a real big jump start with Black Panther, and you see people embrace our culture like no other time in history. And I'm going to keep on going with that trend.
Well, you know, here's what's interesting, too, about what you're doing in Black Panther. You know, and I mentioned this earlier in my broadcast, you know, when Melvin Van Peebles made Sweet Sweet Back's Badass Song, one of the revolutionary things is he put in the credits starring the black community.
And that's right.
That's part of what got lost in the Hollywood version, where, let's just say, it wasn't necessarily black folks writing and directing. But when you do something that has, you know, they say it takes a village to grow a child, you know, it also takes a village, in my opinion, to grow a hero. So for what you're trying to do and for being involved with this, what is your take? Because, you know, you came up at a time prior to social media and to that level of interaction, but now you're part of it. What do you see as
What do you see is how that has, can change things, and what do you see as the future of?
Well, let me tell you, man. Kind of it's funny that you mentioned that, because I call Black Panther the modern version of Sweet Sweetback Badass Song, because at the time our image was not in our control, right? And uplifting images of us were not seen very much, and when we did see it, it represented something. You know, in all of us, and we embraced it like no other time. And I feel that's exactly what has happened with Black Panther. Exactly what happened with Sweet Sweetback's Badass Song. It exposed a zest and a just this hunger for us to be represented in a strong, positive light. And an uplifting light. And so that's essentially, I feel, those how you mentioned that movie, I think it's so apropos for now, because because Black Panther has shown the same ethic.
Well, you know, I agree with you, obviously, 100%, but I also have to say what else is interesting about Black Panther for film and for black heroes and for, you know, doing genres specifically is that, you know, we've long heard, you know, black films don't travel, black films don't, there's no foreign in black films, oh, you know, black film's not going to make money. So you have to live or die domestically. And what that's also saying is that as our stories are of no interest to the rest of the world. Stories where we're the feature and we're telling our perspective on whether it's history or the future is not important. And I think that that's exploding that myth too. What's your take?
Well, it's always been a falsehood. It's because it's in the messaging. It's just like when you say black on black crime, okay? The majority of any ethnic group has crimes upon itself, like white on white crime. You don't hear that. It's not the messaging. In the same way, okay, they say black movies don't sell overseas. Well, the majority of black movies are comedies and dramas. Guess what? The majority of white movies are comedies and dramas, and they don't sell overseas either. What they fail to say in the messaging is action movies. Because there hasn't been a black action movie that hasn't sold overseas.
This is true. Fred Williamson had a career overseas for another 20 years after Blaxploitation.
Exactly. And that's why Wesley Snipes had such a career, because it was overseas. There's a reason why the only Asian and foreign people that we know in our country are Jackie Chan, Jet Li, Jean-Claude Van Damme. People, because they're action people. And see, our movies that sell overseas are action movies. And so we blow up stuff and all of that. So, yeah, those movies sell big, and they tend to be white, but it doesn't matter who's in it. It's not about a color. It's about action. So most of those action movies happen to be, you know, with white leads, if it's James Bond or whatever. Okay, but you can't call that a white movie, because the majority of white movies, hey, in France, in Bulgaria, in Russia, they already have their comedians. They have their dramatic actors. They don't need ours. All they need is us blowing up stuff and doing action. So in the messaging, they get creative. And they try to say that black movies don't sell overseas when white movies don't sell overseas. The majority of white movies do not sell overseas, because the majority of white movies, like black movies, are comedies and dramas, period. But it's just in the same way, like I say, the black on black crime is the messaging making you think that, you know, that this narrative is the truth when it's not, or it's the truth with everyone.
I agree with you 100%, and I think, like you said, it's the messaging, it's how they frame it, and what it's also prevented us from having access, like Black Panther showing, to those hundreds of millions of dollars.
Mm-hmm. You know,
where you know, let's face it, the movies that people, you know, you're talking about action movies. Action movies is a genre. It has nothing to do with race.
They proved the falsehood in something for all the time. There hasn't been a large scale black action movie because of the fear and that BS of them saying that the movie won't sell overseas. When the truth is, this has blown the truth right up in everyone's face. Because if you can point to another large scale action movie with black folks that didn't work, I don't know what that is. The reason I still have a career is because I do movies overseas. I go to Romania in a week to do yet another, my third movie in Romania. When I'm in other countries like that, you'd be surprised that I can mention, you know, I go, I was in Bulgaria, I've been in Romania, and I've been places like that where they don't know who Denzel Washington is. And I'm like, are you kidding me? Well, the fact is, well, they have their own dramatic actors.
Right.
That, you know, and so they may not know. They may not know who, you know, even Daniel Day-Lewis is, you know, or any of our Oscar winners unless they do action. That's why a lot of these big-time actors, they do action as well as drama because they know they can then sell overseas.
Wow, Michael Jai White. All right, so tell us again, just for those, tell us a little bit about, I mean, the Black Dynamite Project, you know, that's how I first met you, to interview for that project when you did the first movie and you've gone on, there's been the animated series, and now you're taking it to another level. And tell us a little bit about the where people need to go and what's going to happen tomorrow.
Well, tomorrow I'm going to do Facebook Live on The Real Michael Jai White, and it's going to be the launch of Gigantic Entertainment's website, where we're going to be hosting our fan page and our fan-funded film for Outlaw Johnny Black. And we're going to let you know how to become involved, how you can even get walk-on roles and get all kinds of swag. And see, what's happening is if this works, this template can be used over and over with other movies. It can really change the face of how movies are made because I'm dealing directly with the audience and not only just the domestic audience, but an audience overseas as well. And so we will have different things that you can get involved with, and you know there's going to be limited, like there'll be four of these or 12 of these kind of things and some different contests and stuff, and so and a lot of collector's items that of course will just go up in value over time. So this is something that we're opening up and a way that we're going to be doing business with a worldwide audience that could change the way movies are made. And I'm committed to doing movies that you're not going to see in the Hollywood system, you know?
I hear you. And Facebook Live, they just go to Michael Jai White, and they can, and at 2 p.m., so it's 5 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 2 p.m. Pacific Time, and people can, you're going to be there live, they can see you, they can ask you questions if they want.
Absolutely. We're going to be there with some of the, you know, your cast members. It's going to be on The Real Michael Jai White, and people can follow me hashtag Twitter at hashtag Michael Jai White, or on Instagram, official Michael Jai on Instagram. And they could find the campaign on official Michael Jai as well. And the actual website is going to be called OutlawJohnnyBlackMovie.com.
All right. Michael Jai White. Listen, you know, I'm very glad to have you on the show. I'm very glad to talk to you right now in the wake of everything that's happened, because I think we're in the midst of a cultural phenomenon, and I agree with you 100%. I think this is the Black Panther is a film that has made, hopefully, Hollywood realize the potential, like you said, of a black action film, of a black action hero, where it's unapologetic. You know, and you know, you're the original from where I'm sitting. You know, you're Spawn. You know, you're the original. You're Black Dynamite. You know, you've been playing heroes for quite some time. So, Michael Jai White.
Well, thank you so much, man. I look forward to, you know, breaking bread and catching up to you when I the next time in the city.
Oh, listen, all right. I'm gonna follow up with you on this. So.
All right. Yeah, definitely.
All right. Thank you, sir.
All right. Thank you so much.
Yes.
So Byron Saunders, I've been talking about a lot of things. We've been talking about movies. Been talking about representation. Been talking about lack of representation by women, by men. I don't know if you're aware of the UCLA document that came out last week that goes with statistics in terms of diversity in the industry. Are you aware of this at all?
I am very aware of it.
Well, it shows, as you know then, if you're aware of it, it shows that not much has changed. But I am curious, Byron, you know, we spoke a little bit last week about Black Panther, and did you watch the Oscars?
I did.
And what are your thoughts? And stay on the phone here because I can't hear you too well.
Okay. My thoughts are that the Oscars, being what they are over the last 90 years, mostly celebrating white filmmaking. And when we do have the opportunity to highlight women and minorities in the entertainment industry on a level in comparison with the white male filmmakers and the studios, which are run predominantly by white men, mostly Jewish white men, we come to understand how the industry itself is restricted. It is a good old boys network and has been for quite some time. And it has been exclusionary because it's been maintaining a position where it can keep out minorities. If you look at the categories and the nominations, notice the predominance of World War II stories, the predominance of 18th and 19th century stories, so that even the costume designs seem to dominate a theme that is consistent with excluding minorities in particular, unless, of course, you are a designer of the French Revolution, Roman conquest, Greek mythology. I mean, these are the elements for which Hollywood predominance in its storytelling and what they acknowledge as excellence in the industry. So I was not surprised by the outcome. I did, however, acknowledge a movement that is highlighting a revolution that is taking place right in front of us. That is, with respect to the hashtag MeToo, women are making a statement, and it's wonderful to see. I think the element of what happened this year with Black Panther being on the market but not being having a chance to be in this year's list of nominees, but it shall be next year, and it'll be very interesting to see how women and minorities really come alive with the nominations for next year. That part of it will have a major change. How? No one can say at this moment, but as they say in our business, money walks, and you know what, money talks, and you know what walks. So it'll be very interesting because the box office reports and receipts usually dominate, except when it comes to sci-fi. I don't know. You tell me, Mike. You're a film critic. When was the last time, if any time, that Star Wars or Star Trek movies won anything in the Oscar nominations? Although they really have made significant impact.
They win in science fiction, and you know, we talked at this at length too. They win in special effects.
Yes.
They win in those categories. And one of the standout things for Get Out was that it's a genre film. Horror is a genre that is pretty much generally overlooked, and it is not exactly what they consider. And as you know, and I talked about earlier in the show, many of the older white voters felt that Get Out was not an Oscar-worthy film. They refused to even see it. So I never really thought it would ever win Best Picture. But what Get Out did, and one of the things I mentioned in my conversation with Jack Rico, is that what Get Out did is remind us that genre films, horror included, science fiction and comedy especially, have the ability to talk about things, how to talk about human condition, talk about social situation, talk about society, and do it in a way that's off-putting, do it in a way that lets down your barriers, so you take it in. And in the case of horror and comedy, you know, which are very related, especially in Jordan Peele's mind, you know, it allows him to speak about things that would be awkward to talk about, but address them. Things like race, which is the elephant in every room in America, to talk about it and show us, and this is something I mentioned in the conversation as well, that, you know, in the last 10, 15 years, we've had hundreds and hundreds of horror films that nothing to really say about anything, whether they were any good or scary or not. And to have a horror film that is not only not torture porn, not exploiting exploitive in any way, but a horror film that is psychological horror, that is sociological horror, a horror film that's funny and has something significant to say, that's mind-blowing. When was the last time a horror film was nominated in any category in the Oscars? It's been a long time, and what that brings to mind for me, and this is what I talk about, and this is what I want to hear your opinion on, is that when you allow women and people of color, and let's just say anything but the dominant culture. You know, straight white males have had plenty of time to tell plenty of stories. And now when we get an opportunity to talk and make the genre of horror, of science fiction, of comedy with you know, they've allowed us to do comedy, but to really get into the big money-making genres, especially science fiction and horror, which are always, you know, science fiction and fantasy, let's face it, that's the most money-making. Horror, that keeps coming back and keeps making tons and tons of money. To allow us to speak in those genres and open up the stories that we can tell. You know, in the last few years, we've seen horror films written and directed by women, and we've seen horror films, and like I said to Jack, you know, you can't name five black horror films, you know? So allowing us to work in these areas and allowing us to tell stories that opens up the genre, that spins it, puts it on its head, that shows the potential of that drama. Storytelling is what human beings do. It is part of what makes us understand who and what we are. And we have to have the opportunity to move in that arena, not just TV, not just small films, but in the films that are seen by the most people on the planet. Do you concur, Mr. Saunders?
Well, yes, I do. And I found it really exceptional that the best picture, now think about this, the best picture is actually a spinoff from a horror film. The Swamp Thing. Okay, now they goosed it up. They made it very spectacular. But to me,
Swamp Thing to me.
That's okay. Because that was a horror. That was a grade B, grade C horror film that we all grew up in the 50s and the 60s. Now, here's the other side of Get Out, which I found extraordinary. Two things that happened during the awards presentation that I found so amusing. It was actually a black-related joke that not everybody got. And that was the comedy relief of sending the Get Out guy, like Sandman at the Apollo, that unless you knew what that was a reference to, you didn't get the joke. Because if you didn't know that Sandman got people off the stage who were bad performers.
Listen. That was a reference not to the Sandman. That was a reference to the movie Get Out.
No, I get that. But see, if you never, your context, if you, from an African-American perspective, if you never knew what the Apollo Theater realities were a bad performance to get off the stage, you send Sandman out. I got it. It was funny. Right, I was cracking up.
You cracking up.
I got it.
It was a reference.
So get out.
Fired.
I know it was. I know
Fired.
That. But
Fired.
You see, the joke fell flat because not everybody knew the joke. Anyway, getting back to Get Out.
Fired.
What I wanted to say was about it being a horror film is that for us, people of color.
Byron. You got to love Byron. You know that. Hashtag.
That's right.
You gotta
love
Byron.
That's right. Okay. So for us as people of color, in particular African Americans, racism is as big a horror film that you could ever talk about. So just like, you, what category, what else would you want to put it in? Now, some wanted to put it into comedy. I get it. Some of it was humorous. But for me and the 35, 40 million African Americans in this country, when you want to talk about horror, don't talk to me about Freddy Krueger. Talk to me about the racism that we have to be confronted with every day. That's a horror film. You don't need zombies. You don't need apocalyptic stuff. Just show me the stuff that I've been going through for 400 years in this country, and I will shriek in horror, okay? So I'm happy because an African-American for the first time won Best Original Screenplay. We made history. Oh, my goodness. You know, that in itself is a moving moment, which I think shares and shows us the potential for the upcoming 2018 Oscars that I have a feeling are going to be very reflective of cultural, ethnic, and spiritual diversity like we've never seen before. Let's be real now. The Mexican director, that in itself is amazing. And his work is being honored in light of the fact that we're trying to build the wall to keep him out. Think about that. This was huge. And it's a political statement as much as it is an entertainment statement. And so we're acknowledging stories that are no longer about World War II and relationship to obviously Dunkirk and then, of course, concentration camp stories. And no more stories that we've – how many more stories do we have to see about the 19th century – or the 18th century, or the 17th century, in which we're glorifying the Renaissance periods of Europe, highlighting those moments when, you know, the great masters of European art, like Renoir and Modigliani, and Pablo, the major artists of the period in which we highlight high society. And so this is a big change. And then, of course, the winner for Best Actress highlighted a movie which you and I saw together. I liked the movie, but it would not have been my favorite for the year. And I love
the movie. What movie do we see together, Byron?
Three Billboards in the Country Somewhere or whatever.
Oh, that's right. We saw that together with the boys.
Yes. Excuse me. Is your mind really gone that far?
That's right. I saw that with Byron Saunders.
Thank you very much.
Because he didn't hold my hand.
No, I didn't. I didn't buy the popcorn either.
That's right. You didn't buy me any popcorn. You didn't hold my hand.
So I don't remember you.
I don't. Who is this? Yeah. So, but I thought it was a very good movie. And I thought
it's a good movie. I enjoyed it, but I enjoyed the performers more than I enjoyed the storyline.
Well, that's why they both won Oscars, babe.
Well, yes, but I would not have voted for it for Best Picture.
I didn't. I concur, Byron. I concur.
Okay.
I concur.
That's my opinion. Yes.
That's your opinion.
Yes.
And are you optimistic about the future?
Oh, I am. Because here's my optimism more than just the awards program. And this goes way past Oscar itself.
You have optimism? Does this go into feeding the homeless and clothing the naked?
Ultimately, I would imagine it would get there.
Of course it does, Byron.
And you can show us. You'll have a free.
Hashtag.
Yes, hashtag.
You got to love Byron.
That's right.
Okay.
Now, here's the optimism for the future, which I and you and I as filmmakers. and producers of the art.
Are you a producer of the art, Bart?
Yes, I am. And you're like yourself, we are Renaissance men, okay?
Are you a Renaissance man, Bart?
I am indeed a Renaissance man. Okay. And so the future looks very bright, because when I look at the box office receipts for Disney's Black Panther, by next week, the third week, it'll surpass $1 billion worldwide. And for me, I find that so incredible, because of that $1 billion, 30% of that money is coming out of the African-American community, which says to me two things. One, when we go to pitch our movies, what's this one factoid that
so
we
wait,
have
wait,
to...
Wait. Bar, where do you get this percentage, 30% comes out of African-American community? Are you saying that of $1 billion, African-Americans have $300 million to spend for a movie? Is that
That's correct. I am saying
and how,
that.
And where are you getting these statistics from?
These are statistics that have been provided by box office reports and other agencies that...
I want to see... Show me the paper.
Well, you,
but Barry,
I know you're going to see it.
I want to see it. What a special guest. Are you there?
I am here. I am here. And I am joining in at the point where I'm like, why are we quoting real statistics? We live in a fact-free era. You can just
That's
make
right.
them up.
This is the fact-free era, Byron.
You can make it up. You can make up your numbers. That's fine.
Not only can you make it up, Byron, but if you disagree with anything I say, no matter what I show you, it's fake news. We live in the obliteration of reality.
Oh, well,
so
that's
literally
because virtual. For those who want to live in virtual reality, I guess so. I like to live in real world time. Okay.
You mean real world?
Where we can feed the hungry, clothe the naked, sometimes the homeless.
So, Leanne, welcome.
Hello, Leanne. One of my favorite people. Okay. Leanne, I gave you some props this past week.
Did you see that?
Yes, I did, darling. I'm in love with you. I'm sorry, Mike. I have to say it. So now the world knows.
That's it. You're one of his favorite humans, just so you know.
I will take that. I will take that. And I understand once we cross over, cross species, I may drop down on the list.
No. You will always be at the top of my list. I'm sorry.
Right.
Okay.
I only reserve that for certain people. Okay.
Top humanoid Homo sapien, just so you know.
That's it. And, if the world were coming to an end, I would like to have you considered to be my partner to start the world.
Oh, wow. Race. Look at that. He wants to restart the human race with you, Leanne.
That's big doings.
I got to use that. I'm going to use that line next time I meet a beautiful woman.
I'm going to have to tell my remaining eggs, hey, lady, I might have a job for you.
See, that's my virtual world.
That's a line right there. Yeah, for the world end, baby, I want to restart humanity with you.
Okay.
Yeah, that's,
I think we make some good people, okay?
Wow. The gauntlet has been thrown down. That's right.
Now, Leanne, let me ask you, okay? Leanne Lord, who is a comedian, a culture critic, critic of humanity, and humorist. You saw Black Panther, Wakanda Forever.
Wakanda Forever, saw it three times.
Okay, saw it three times. You saw Get Out.
Yes.
Okay, you've been watching, and even if you haven't seen Luke Cage, you're aware of Luke Cage, you're aware of Black Lightning, okay?
Yes, I am.
You know, you've actually read Octavia Butler, okay?
Yes, I actually just finished Parable of the Sower, yes.
Okay, Parable of the Sower, and again, she was a friend of mine. You have actually, not only that, you've seen some of these. Did you see Shape of Water?
I did not.
Right, but you're aware of Guillermo del Toro's work.
Yes.
And you're aware that he is Mexican.
Oh, I am now. Okay. And I hope he keeps that to himself, because we have a little immigrant issue going on here. I don't care how many awards you get, you might find yourself on the other side of this wall. We can't afford
this
a bill.
This is true, because it depends on your dream. But here's my question. My question to you is, and this is what I was discussing with Byron, we were discussing with Jack Rico, is, are you optimistic about the future? Do you feel, you know, at the same, on the one hand, the Oscars, you know, Jack Rico mentioned how during the Oscars, every other commercial he saw had a person of color in it. And we saw a lot of diversity in the presenters at the Oscars, okay? Mm-hmm. And the best screenplay was written, was given to a man who wrote a screenplay and made a movie about race relations. At the same time, we have Trump as president. You know, he just signed a series of our rights away. He just made it legal for companies to dump their waste into the waterways of America, you know. So there are all kinds of things. And we just heard about how Pfizer, you know, they got a big tax break, and they decided to stop researching Alzheimer's because, you know, it's not profitable. So on the one hand, we have this huge contrast, okay. Are you optimistic during this shaky historic time? Are you optimistic about representation on screen and in film? And again, keeping in mind that UCLA diversity report that came out last week, I don't know if you're aware of that, but it came out and basically said that nothing has changed. So what are your thoughts and what do you feel? Are you optimistic? And if you are or are not, why?
Well, what I am optimistic about is that Killmonger has opened T'Challa's eyes, and maybe I'll be able to immigrate to Wakanda since things are so bleak here. That's my hope. Other than that, I have to say no. I am not optimistic. You know, in addition to that report that you just cited, I believe about a week or so ago, the Washington Post had a report that said in the last 50 years, the African-American community has not made any progress in terms of economics and housing, and it's as if we've been standing still or our progress is negligible. So we are, on the one hand, better educated and have less to show for it. And so while we do have artistic gains, or at least visible ones at this moment, I worry that it will only exist as long as the movement is a profitable market. And when we stop being a market, then they will move on to the next thing. You know, I have a back of the mind concern that someone will go, oh, well, Black Panther is an anomaly. They'll make it the special one, you know, and find that, and use that as a reason to not finance films of this magnitude. They'll say, oh, this was the Highlander of Black superheroes. I know I just totally mixed references there, but my sci-fi geeky people will get it. And again, maybe I've just been on the planet a little too long. You get your hopes up and you get your feelings hurt.
Right.
Consistently.
Byron's been here longer than you, and you know, he's still optimistic. But let me ask you the question
here. Well, I don't know what the dosage is of Byron's medication.
I myself have been trying to find that out for 20 years.
You
Wakanda
know, if you'd
forever.
Like to share. Well, you know what? Here's the thing. There's that is my non-optimistic take. On the other hand, I can't tell you when my chest has been puffed out bigger, when my heart has soared higher, when my mind has been more open than seeing Black Panther.
Okay.
You know, and seeing that behind a movie like Get Out, which is like, you know, sort of like the Black Twilight Zone, it just touches on all those things where you just go, well, yeah, somebody's getting it. You know, somebody is finally singing our song, you know, in an authentic way. I will say when you sit in the theater and you take that in, the hope gets me. It does get me. It's the bright light of day outside of the theater where things don't look as hopeful.
All right. Well, let me ask you this, Leanne. Considering the temperature of things right now, okay, you know, and
you mean bipolar global warming doesn't exist temperature?
Yeah, I'm just the dichotomy of having the most sexist, racist president ever while we are fighting for the most diverse representation and in the middle of the Me Too movement, okay? You know, yeah. Whatever that correlation is. My question to you is, I believe that Hollywood, this was my thought, and this is what I said with Jack Rico. Hollywood follows the money, okay? Two reasons why I'm encouraged by Black Panther and Get Out and you know, the Octavia Butler stuff that's coming and blah, 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 and the money being made is because, A, Hollywood follows the money. That's how the blaxploitation era was born. Mm-hmm. And, B, you know, right now, you know, once these barriers are broken, it's like once the doors are open, it's really you can't stop it. It's like once
really
shy. Well, really? Here's what
you really think that because here's where I'm coming from,
and then I want your total response. Here's where I'm coming from. You know, just on the case of Black Panther, okay, what makes Black Panther so unique, among the other things, is that unlike every other black hero we've ever had, who is a hero who happens to be black, okay, we have a hero who is proud of his blackness, proud of his heritage. He's a proud African man, you know, even though it's an imaginary Africa. Stay with me.
So
the point is that what that is, that narrative, that seen narrative in a, especially in a Hollywood blockbuster, is the narrative of the black character who's not trying to assimilate, okay, or be accepted by the dominant culture. We see a black character who is, you know, deciding on whether or not he wants to even be part of that, because in this universe that is the most popular universe of all time, okay? Let's face it, Marvel Comics, those movies have made more money if you combine them than any movie of all time. So the most popular universe of all time, the most advanced culture on the planet is an African one. Just putting that notion out there, even though it's not specifically, I don't think DC's, you know, everybody's wearing dashikis up at DC and all about, you know, power for the people, but they put that out there, okay? Whether they realize, you know, from a financial standpoint is one thing. Whether they realize the significance culturally of what that means on the planet not, it's out there. Mm-hmm. And now it opens the minds of humans. Let's just back up into that whole sci-fi perspective. A minds of humans that being black is something that you could imagine you could be proud of. Okay, you could even imagine being proud of being black. That's something you're not necessarily. So that being said, and seeing the money that's being made by something like Get Out, seeing one of the you know, the unicorn of a black horror film actually get nominated for several Oscars, that in itself is just, that would be a big story right there if Black Panther had never come out. Along with all of that, we know. And again, this is the context I mentioned with Jack Rico. We know throughout history, human beings, whatever humans are in charge, are not going to let go easily, whether they're Romans or Hebrews or whatever they are. My question to you is, do you see, and I know you're not optimistic, do you see that this could potentially, where we are right now, could potentially be the catalyst for a change in the overall narrative of black stories for women? You know, we've had Wonder Woman. My belief is that the term fights like a girl will become obsolete pretty soon. You know, are you encouraged, A, for people of color, and B, for women? And if so, why? If not, why? Just in the movie arena, with the right. things I've given you the context for.
There's a lot there. But I will really just say I feel the term fight like a girl has been obsolete for quite a while. I earned my black belt several years ago. So if you want to fight like a girl, I'll see you on the street.
Oh.
so I just
Wait a minute.
Had to put
Hold
that
on.
Out.
She's
a black belt.
Hold on.
Got a black
Hold
belt.
On.
That should kick your ass, Byron.
Leanne. Let's just wait. Let's not wait to the end of the world. Will you marry me right now? I'm on my knees. I got the ring ready. Come on now. Let's just not play games anymore. Because I think I need a warrior woman by my side. And if that's you, come on, baby. It's time. We can make Wakanda right here.
Listen, when you talk about warrior women, the women, the Dora Milaje, if I'm pronouncing that correctly, they had my heart. Those
Man too.
Chicks had my heart.
Yes,
I was like, how you doing?
mm-hmm. Hello.
But to try, I will again, Mike, you put a lot out there. Okay. First of all, what makes Black Panther as a superhero different? From Luke Cage and from Black Lightning is that it's not starting from the point of the reluctant superhero. It's not starting from the point of we are struggling and trying to fix the community and none of that. They are starting from a point of excellence where they accept who they are as a matter of course. They are not looking at all for any sort of corroboration of their brilliance and greatness. They just are. And that is something that is so uplifting and different for us. You know, that we already on 10. If you listen to the soundtrack of the movie, are you on 10 yet? You know, 10 is one of the, I think it's like the third song on the soundtrack. I've been playing it endlessly. So in that, going from that, I would like to think that this is an opening door for a change. I guess my longer-term question is, will this be a lasting and sustainable change? Because if you look at history from a few steps back and a little bit more in its totality, every time women, people of color, African Americans, you know, anyone in the vulnerable, you know, parts of the community have made strides. There's been an equal and opposite backlash to that. You know, so you say that you're positive, you say that you're optimistic, the door is open. We have one of the most brilliant men, whether you like him or not, black men, as president. You know, you couldn't get someone with more impeccable credentials and family life. And yet, what has the reaction been to that open door? What was the reaction to the civil rights movement? What was the reaction to, you know, getting rid of Jim Crow? You know, there's always been, you know, oh, the door's open, we're going to be positive, there's going to be change. And the folks who feel most chafed, for whatever reason, by that change, have found a way to snatch hope and take us two steps back from the one step forward we have gone. So I want to be there with you. I really do. But I'm going to watch. And, like, how are they going to try to steal this joy? Because this will actually be a hard joy to steal because folks are happy. I question that 30%, whether or not really 30% of the money is from the African-American community. I think we have more than that. I know I have contributed to that three times. I will happily contribute more. I'm going to cut into my shoe budget, my bag budget, any other budget to support this movie in any way possible. And I think the community feels that way as well. So I think we've got more than 30% in that pot that's rising to a billion. Have I answered your question, sir? Will there be more questions for the jury?
Well, you absolutely answered the question, and I mean, you know, it leads to, you know, obviously some other questions, but, you know, the only other follow-up to that before, because I know Byron's chomping at the bit, he has something he wants to ask you, but the only other question I'd ask you then is, do you see and this is a more complex question maybe.
You know, more complex? Okay, now I'm going to have to start writing stuff down, because okay. Your questions are like 10 minutes long.
Okay. I've long believed that sexism trumps racism, okay, pardon the pun there. But historically, you know, during the feminist movement, during the suffragette movement, women, especially women who represent the dominant culture, let's just say white women, have not necessarily aligned themselves with, you know, let's just say against the common enemy. You know, that same foot that's on their neck is been on the neck of people of color, male and female. But, you know, Frances McDormand, okay, on the Oscars, her sentiment is that women need to come together. And there is a semblance of a connection between the Me Too movement and Time's Up and you know, people of color. But at the same time, we're getting a lot of positive press on Florida, and it's horrible what happened. But Black Lives Matter was never embraced in this way.
No.
So,
before we even get to Florida, there was a whole lot in that first part of the question.
Yeah, well, that I'm closing in on the final part of the question. The final part of the question is, keeping all that context in, do you see any greater, to use the phrase, collusion between the Me Too movement, women in general, and whether it's Black Lives Matter, just people of color in general?
Wow, okay. Not to
For those listening, let me identify you for you to qualify your answer. You know, you are Leanne Lord, you're a humorist, you're a woman of color, you're a comedian,
for this particular identification, let's mm-hmm. be real clear, because people of color has been sort of broadened, you know, in a way that may not speak to the specificity of what's important here. I am African American, okay, which comes with its own very specific baggage. And then aside from that, I'm also of Caribbean descent. So, you know, if you want to talk about my people are from the place where they broke slaves, you know, so we want to get that history and that identification right, you know, for this particular question, because I don't, I want to join him and everybody have that big kumbaya moment, but I'm not sure you can talk about feminism as one big happy family and not acknowledge the intersectionality of women of color, black women, trans women, you know, in each, and I'm not trying to leave anybody out. I'm trying to put those in as examples of people and groups that have very specific claims and very specific issues that just feminism, you know, as a title, doesn't cover. So I think we have to be very, very clear on our terms in order to get closer to a good question and a better answer. And I don't have an answer. I haven't been here long enough on the planet, and the older I get, I feel like the less that I know. You know, whenever you have something that seems like a good cause, you know, life, equal rights, equal pay, and then you put a color on it, whoa. Now we have problems, you know. Not only do women make less than men, but African-American women make less. And who makes less than us? Latina women. You know, so to not acknowledge that and take that into consideration is problematic. When you mentioned, you know, what's going on in Florida, again, you know, black children wanting to march and protest and say, hey, we want the right to live. We want the right to not be shot by the very people our tax money is paying to protect us. Now there's problems. Now it's labeled a subversive organization. Like, well, wait a minute, what happened? You know, are we not still talking about young people who have the right to go to school and live in peace? What just changed there that changed the sympathy of the people watching or listening to this argument? So, Mike, there's a lot here to unpack, you know, and to do so without a glass of wine in my hand is particularly challenging.
I understand. Well, just so you know, you are tuned to listener-sponsored radio, WBAI 99.5 FM in New York and on the web at WBAI.org. I'm talking with Byron Saunders. Byron, you still there?
Night Shift, baby. That's my favorite show.
Byron is still there. And we're speaking
he's
with...
He's still there. He's if I understand correctly, he's working on the wedding invitation.
He's working on the wedding
That's right. You got that right. I ain't playing. See, Leanne, let me tell you something. I'm going to have the limo come pick you up. Don't even worry. I got this. Yeah, I got this.
Listen,
okay.
Mac, Darren's Byron's a Mac Daddy from way back. But we're still in our marathon, so if you're enjoying the conversation, you've been enjoying the show, please make a pledge. Become a BAI buddy. You can, right now, you can email give to WBAI.org, or you can just go to the WBAI.org website, and there's all kinds of ways to pledge. But here's the concept with the BAI buddy. If you make a pledge and you commit to $10 a month, $25 a month, $50 a month would be great. But if you do that and we get 10 of them throughout the show, check it out. We could do the marathon. We do half the time. We could do a marathon for like a week, okay, because we already know that money's coming in because it's committed. So commit, make the commitment, become a buddy. We call it BAI buddy, but essentially you're being a supporter. Essentially you are saying free speech radio is important to me, WBAI is important to me. If you pledge during night shift is important to you, Byron's important to you, Leanne, all the night shift characters that have been here over the years. I don't even want to say how many decades we've been on, just to say we've been on a long ass time. And if you've been listening and you enjoy it, you should make your pledge right now and make it. Just do it. Just do it right now. WBAI.org or give to WBAI.org. And if you're enjoying the music, listen, it's all part of the DGM. DGM stands
DGM.
For Damn
That's right.
Good music.
Okay.
Winter 2018 DGM. $35 pledge, 88 tracks, over 6.5 hours of music. I'm going to play a bunch to you before we go. But, Leanne Lord, I thank you for your insight. And are you playing anywhere soon that we can come see you?
I am actually going to be uptown in Harlem. I'm at Mist.
In Harlem? You're going to be up in
Harlem? Yes, yes, yes. Me
you
and
know,
the gentrifiers.
It's hell up in Harlem.
Yeah, no, right? I will be where the colonizer is living now. Yes, but I have
it used to be called Strivers Row. Now it's called Colonizers Row.
Colonizers Row.
Yes,
also known as gentrification. Yes. Okay.
Please don't get me started. That's a whole other show.
That's another whole thing. Yeah.
But I will definitely be I guess in your neck of the woods, and that's this Thursday. At MIST they have a comedy series, and that's March 8th. At 8 o'clock.
Did you say MIST? M-I-S-T?
M-I-S-T. Yeah.
On 116th and Lenox, baby. Come on.
There we go.
See, Byron
exactly.
Knows. Byron knows. That's right, because he's Byron Saunders. All right, well, thank you, Byron Saunders.
Yes,
and
sir.
I want to thank those who are listening for the pledges and the support they have given to WBAI. You can visit us on the web at NITESHIFT, and you can see right there. If you go to our page, there's a whole thing right on there where you can plug in. You can get your DGM, and you'll be happy. You'll be have the new soundtrack for your life. You need this. You need this.
I like that. A new soundtrack for your life. That's good.
A new soundtrack for your life. That's right. And if you listen last week,
and now Mike,
to your blue space, yes,
Mike. I just wanted to add in one thing about the hope of the future of
industry. You have hope
industry.
For the future. I know, but Byron, you're going to close the naked. You want to close the naked.
Well, because I didn't get a chance to say it, but I agree with Leanne and both of your principles of the door that's open. And what reminds me, because I'm just a teeny bit older than the both of you, is
did
that
you say
it,
a teeny
bit, that's right.
Oh. What does that mean?
Tiny and a little bit more than an inch more to add to that, to Nietzsche. Anyway, so I remember the 60s, 70s, the
of course
Afrocentric movement. This reminds
me
of
that
period.
Was that what it was called in the 60s, the Afrocentric music?
Yes, and the I'm Black and I'm Proud movement. And we were at that moment when we were wearing the dashikis. We were celebrating with our women and protecting our families and realizing that it takes a village, an African village, to raise and protect the village, not just the children. And then we had the assassinations. And then the COINTELPRO concept was really put into place because then we dispersed the Black Panther Party. We dispersed Southern Christian Leadership Conference. We dispersed PUSH, and it became a snake without a head. Black Panther is providing a connected moment to that lost in between time of that when it was shut down till now the awakening. This is Revelations, okay? This is biblical what's going on. And yes, the money was made for Disney. The money was made for Disney. But remember this, of that 30% and probably even more, 80% of this film was made in Atlanta, where there is the billion-dollar industry of hip-hop. There is the film, mega film studios of Tyler Perry and others who have give us hope that if we connect our music industry, film industry, and athletes who are making all this money, that they can reinvest their money into something that is a proven vehicle.
Listen to me. Don't even you boasting about Atlanta, okay? Atlanta's making all this money. Movies being, TV shows being made and shot down there. But meanwhile, when Delta decided that they weren't going to support the NRA, legislators in that town moved very quickly, within a week, to get rid of the tax breaks they were getting on fuel. So don't even talk to me.
Do you know what Delta's response was? Delta's response was.
They doubled down. I know what Delta's
response was. They doubled down. Now, that's
I'm not talking about Delta's response. I'm talking about the government of Atlanta that you're so supportive of. To heck with Atlanta.
No, excuse me. Hold on. The state.
The
state of
the
state is Georgia. The state is Georgia.
Right.
But did you know that the mayor and the city council president are both African American females? Okay.
Let
so let's come back to a reality. Because there's a dynamic of Wakanda that's actually happening there. You gotta get
Can
to
I
it.
Can I say this, Leanne? Byron is the master of hyperbole. You know, you just really can't pin Byron on anything because he's a master hyperbole. And I also got to say, you got to watch out for Byron. Don't let him talk too much because next thing you know, Byron's known, he talks, and then your panties are off, just so you know. That's how Byron is.
Oh,
wow,
stop
that. Is that happening to you, Mike? Is that what you're saying? Are you speaking from experience?
I didn't even have any panties. Next thing you know, there's a pair of panties in my hand. I'm like, Byron.
Now, just hold on. Before you put that out there, I am working right now on a major project of #MeToo that's going to take place that Yvette Heidegger is putting together, where 17 women are coming together to tell their stories about the industry. This is huge, Leanne. This is going to take place at the National Action Network the 18th of this month, and it's free to the public. And it's going to be live streaming. So this is really important.
What are you doing? How are you involved, Byron?
I'm the production stage manager.
Oh, okay. Byron's like, well, I'm talking to panties over here. But...
No, see, I have respect for my sisters, okay? I don't know about...
Of course.
Y'all are a mess.
All right, that's just Byron. That's just, you know. But, Leanne, my last question to you is, before you go, so you're going to be performing, you said, what's the dates again?
It's called the Mist Restaurant in Harlem. That's Mist, M-I-S-T. They have a comedy series on Thursdays, and I will be there this Thursday, which is March 8th, and the show starts at 8 o'clock. And it's going to be a great show because, I mean, there's some really, you know, wonderful, very, very, very funny folks on. And, you know, if nothing else, I'm there. You know, so, you know, you need to come get these jokes and joy.
That's right. And how can people follow you on social media, et cetera?
Oh, sure. The easiest conduit to me is my website, which is veryfunnylady.com because Leanne is not always that easy to spell unless you're family. So I am Leanne Lord and Very Funny Lady both on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram. And veryfunnylady.com is how you find me.
Byron, and
yes,
can
sir.
People follow you? What is it? Occupation Fool at...
exactly. .com.
Do you,
.net, Byron, .com, .org.
Do you have a Twitter or an Instagram or anything like that?
I am Twitter, but Facebook is Byron C. Stanton.
Yeah, I was about to say Facebook. Byron is Facebook
Twitter.
Central.
Yes, I am Facebook. Yes, Byron C. Saunders or BCS Experience, History, Arts, Culture, Politics, and Review and Discussion.
BCS Experience, of course.
That's it.
Byron is.
Yes.
Actually an experience, just so you know.
Yes, that's right.
Is an experience. And like I said, if you're enjoying Night Shift, and of course if you're enjoying WBAI, please make a pledge now. Become a WBAI.